everyone, and welcome back to the XCast X-Files Podwatch. This is episode 67, and today we're covering Aguamala and Monday. I'm your host today, Carl Sweeney, and I'm joined by Andrew Blaker. Hi, Andrew.
Hello, Carl. How are you doing?
Yeah, doing fine, thanks. So we're getting into the second half of the sixth season here. I always think it's interesting just to see what people think about the seasons we're talking about. So where do you stand on season six in general?
Well, I was going to save this answer for my first formal X-Files recording. I haven't actually had one yet, but I would probably say season six is my favorite season. I think in terms of consistency, it has a lot of high-quality episodes. Not necessarily my all-time favorite episodes, but very high quality. So I really enjoy the most of this season.
Interesting. It's obviously, it's the first season set in LA, and the show changes quite a bit because of that. Yeah, but some of the episodes in season six are real gems, aren't they?
They really are. I mean, you've got several in a row, or mostly in a row, where it's just, you just felt like, I don't know, maybe it was just change in energy, recording new episodes in a new area, I don't know, but it just, you know, from Triangle, you know, onward, you've just got some great classics in there.
Yeah, there's some stuff like Drive is one that springs to mind, where they're really intelligently using the change in location to their advantage, I think.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we're in February 1999 for these two, which is when they first aired. The first one is Aguamala, which is the 13th episode of the sixth season, written by David Amann and directed by Rob Bowman. And this is the episode in which the agents search for a sea monster in Florida during a hurricane. All right, Andrew, so over to you. What do you think about this episode?
I definitely don't think it's probably the strongest of the season by any means, but it's not terrible. I mean, the monster element is a little confusing, to be honest, to me. Mm. It takes a couple watches to kind of figure out, okay, what exactly are they saying is the monster? How does the monster generate? You know, what's the issue here? But, you know, overall, it's one of those kind of, you know, claustrophobic, you know, inclement weather kind of episodes that they do pretty well. It's average for me. You know, I could take it or leave it, in all honesty. I think it's got some funny moments in it. It certainly benefits from the character of Arthur Dales kind of being in the first of the episode, kind of nice style that I think it sets apart. But overall, yeah, it's just kind of in the middle for me.
Yeah, I was going to mention Arthur Dales. I suppose that's one of the memorable aspects of this episode. Actually, it's an episode I find quite forgettable. I always struggle to remember much about it. But yeah, Arthur Dales' second and final appearance, really, because Darren McGavin should then have been in The Unnatural, but he was taken ill a couple of days into filming of that. I think he had a stroke.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, sadly. So he's obviously like the spiritual father of the X-Files in a way. They wanted him to play Senator Matheson in season two. And then they wanted him to play Bill Mulder's father, but that didn't happen.
Mm.
So yeah, he's fun. I don't know, I just find this episode quite grating. I don't know why exactly. I just feel like, especially in the first half of the episode, I just feel like I'm watching people shout a lot.
Yeah.
Over the rain and stuff. So yeah, I think I'm, if anything, I'm probably slightly more negative about it than you, but I struggle to get too worked up about it either way, to be honest. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. It's like I said, you kind of take it or leave it. It's not, I mean, there's some kind of gruesome moments when you think about it, the monster guy sitting on the toilet, that kind of thing, but it's just overall it's not very compelling to me.
Yeah, I saw a quote from Rob Bowman where he's talking about how it sounded like he was quite worried this would turn out to be like a real stinker, but he felt that the end result wasn't as bad as he thought it might be. So yeah, you get the feeling that, you know, nobody probably expected this to be, you know, a classic or anything.
Right. It's certainly, I mean, they've certainly done worse, so I won't complain about it, but yeah, it's kind of in the middle.
It's an interesting one in regards episode placement. So this comes directly after One Son. I think the production order got a bit shuffled around, because I think in Arcadia, Mulder and Scully talk about that being their first case back on the X-Files, but that, for whatever reason, possibly some post-production issues, I'm not really sure. This ended up being the first one after One Son, so you've got like the colonization of the planet being at stake one week, and then this sort of small-scale story of the next.
Exactly. I mean, it was definitely, you know, Arcadia was filmed before Aguamala, but yeah, so there's that kind of, you know, it's kind of jarring, I think, coming off of, you know, that huge myth arc you know, two-parter, and then you're all of a sudden, like nothing happened, you're just back to, I mean, so that, you know, but they've always kind of done that, you know, they transition very rapidly from a serious episode, you know, an event episode, back to kind of a monster of the week, without a lot of warning.
Yeah, definitely. It never really bothered me, to be honest, but then in the most recent series, I did find it quite odd, the fact that you've got, like My Struggle, you know,
and then, yeah, that was definitely, the transition has always been a little rushed for the whole series, in my opinion, but season 10 amped it up in terms of, you know, just, it was whiplash. I mean, it was whiplash from episode to episode.
I think that it jars more in this day and age as well, I think.
Yes.
The way television's changed and everything. Sure. But back to Aguamala, though, I mean, yeah, there's an old film called Key Largo, which is set in Florida during a hurricane. It's set in a hotel, I think, it's with Humphrey Bogart, with like a similarly sized cast of characters. And I never really made the connection until I watched it this time. I don't know if it was an explicit influence, but I think it may have been. But I don't know. What did you think of like the supporting characters who they introduced in this particular episode? For my money, none of them were particularly well-drawn or memorable.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. To be honest, none of them, even just thinking, remembering the episode, I've seen it not that long ago, probably the last couple months or so, but no one stands out to me as particularly memorable or sketched out or anything.
Yeah, it's interesting because I've been recording some of these Podwatch episodes with Chris Knowles, the guy who co-wrote the Complete X-Files book, and he was saying that he made the observation, it made a lot of sense to me actually, which was that when the series gets to Los Angeles, R.W. Goodwin left the series, the executive producer. Mm. He liked the acting on the X-Files to be as understated as possible, and then as soon as you get to season 6, you see that some of the supporting characters are given a bit more license and free rein to sort of turn their performances up a bit. So I think in episodes like this, maybe some of the supporting characters are giving quite broad, exaggerated performances, which you probably wouldn't have seen much of in the Vancouver era.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, that makes sense.
But what about the monster then? You said that you mentioned like some of this stuff when the monster's a bit confusing, but what did you think of that aspect of things, like visually? I mean, how highly does this monster rank in the X-Files pantheon?
Well, like I said, since I get kind of just confused by, you know, so the fresh water, that, you know, you kind of have the salt water versus fresh water. And it almost, and I'm probably going to butcher this, but it seems like the salt water kind of breeds the creature. The fresh water keeps the creature at bay, maybe.
Yeah.
So it's like, well, what exactly is the creature? Is it it's made of water then? Or it's just kind of odd to me. You don't really ever see much of the creature either. And it just kind of, it's very abstract to me. If it just felt kind of abstract and I couldn't really get into it.
Mm. I think for me, by the time I get to the point in the episode where they're sort of explaining things a little, I'm already sort of checked out a bit.
Yeah.
They'd already lost me by that point, I think. Andrew, is there anything else you wanted to mention about this episode or anything you thought was significant about it in any way?
Not really, to be perfectly honest with you. Like I said, just kind of, you know, not a terrible episode. I'll say that. It's not a terrible episode. It has its moments, you know, but it just wouldn't be one I would go back to visit really very often.
No, it's interesting because in the first part of the sixth season, especially when I was watching it the first time, I'm just kind of really waiting for them to get reassigned back on the X-Files so they can tackle some sort of, you know, more typical, straightforward monster cases. And then as soon as it happens, it's quite a bit of a letdown. But careful what you wish for, I suppose.
That's right.
So Monday is episode 14 of the sixth season, written by Vince Gilligan and John Scheiben, directed by Kim Manners. And this, of course, is the episode in which Mulder and Scully live the same day over and over again in a story involving a failed bank robbery. Do you find this one memorable and worth revisiting?
Yes, I love Monday. I think it falls in the top 20 for me, to be perfectly honest. I've rewatched it several times recently and in preparation for this as well, and it's an excellent episode.
It's a very, very good one. I think I'd probably go so far as to say it's one of the highlights of the sixth season, for me at least.
Absolutely.
I don't think they'd have used this premise in earlier seasons, you know. I don't think you can't really envisage this kind of story in the first one or two seasons, for example.
Right. That's true.
Obviously, the show's looser now, and they can do all sorts of different things. So that's why you get stories like this, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I think everybody compares this to Groundhog Day. But, I mean, there's an interesting quote from Vince Gilligan where he says, we weren't ripping off Groundhog Day, we were ripping off The Twilight Zone. It's kind of interesting, because by the time you get into the later seasons, you do get a few more Twilight Zone-style episodes. Kim Manners did a really good job, I think, in making this episode not monotonous to watch, you know.
Well, yeah, actually, I mean, the episode, I looked it up because I was interested. It's the episode of The Twilight Zone is called Shadow Play. And yes, okay. I mean, it's definitely, you know, it could probably be argued the Groundhog Day ripped off Shadow Play. I think it's a great episode. You know, it does require you to be patient. I mean, if you're one for repetition, you may have trouble getting into the episode, staying with the episode, the world being trapped in a time loop and all. But I think it really benefits from the supporting cast. You have Carrie Hamilton, who some may know is actually the daughter of Carol Burnett. You had her cast as Pam, who is really the one who, I guess, you know, kind of holds the key to stopping the time loop, who knows what's going to happen and finally figures out a way to, you know, stop it from happening over and over and over again. And she's just excellent in this. And then Darren E. Burroughs played Bernard, her boyfriend, the bomber. And I think you just had a real strong cast there. I mean, they just conveyed the characters well, and I think had it been other actors, other situations, maybe different character stories, you may not have had it as received as well.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, casting is key here, and it ends up being a very, very touching episode, I think. But yeah, I mean, like, if you look in the seventh season, you get an episode like Fight Club with Kathy Griffin, for example. If she'd have ended up in this episode.
Oh my god. Yeah, that would not have been very good, no.
Yeah.
I'll say there's... I think one thing that this episode benefits from, I mean, it balances the drama and the comedy pretty well. I mean, it's both. It starts off, well, after the teaser, it starts off very much kind of a lighthearted comedy episode. There's a meeting that Mulder is, you know, late for, and the meeting is, you know, one that's, you know, the world's longest meeting or however she calls it. And, you know, there's the inside joke about, you know, when did Mulder get a waterbed? You know, jumping back to earlier in the season, Dreamland, where Morris Fletcher as Mulder bought a waterbed. And so you just have a lot of those in jokes, those nods to the audience. And yet it transitions into, you know, Mulder and Scully dying over and over and over again. And it balances the comedy and the drama really well, that I think other episodes, when they try to do that, don't succeed as well as this one does.
Yeah, because I think that it's interesting that you like the sixth season so much, because I remember at the time there was a bit of uproar in the online fan community that, especially in the first half of the season, it gets so lighthearted at times. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you got Dreamland, The Rain King, stuff like that.
It does. It really, and you know, I wasn't one that when I first made my way through the entire series back in college, it wasn't a season that necessarily stood out to me as that. But as I've gone by, I've realized one thing. I think this is just my opinion. I think the move to LA kind of made the series a little bit more experimental. Season 6 and, in my opinion, season 7 have a lot of experimental episodes. Sometimes they flop, sometimes they succeed. But I think season 6 has, you know, like you said, I mean, you start off with Drive, you know, you go through Dreamland, which, you know, like it or love it, some people, you know, both, but Triangle. I mean, I don't think Monday could have really been successful if Triangle had not been as popular as it was, because they're both very experimental episodes. They're not really investigating a case. They're caught in a case. They're caught in this almost alternative universe, if you will. And I think, you know, like you said, back in season 2, season 3, I don't think that would have been something they would have been able to do. So I got to give them kudos for at least, you know, kind of branching out. And I feel like for the most part, season 6 is, in terms of the standalone Monster of the Week episodes, I'm sorry, I think that it wins most of the time there.
Yeah, this one definitely works a treat. I just had a quote from Kim Manners when I was talking earlier about how, you know, it doesn't become monotonous to watch because of the way it's shown visually. He talked about he approached this as if it was four different episodes, you know. So he was very aware of the fact that, you know, you had to do something because you're showing the same sequence of events over and over again. And I think, if you look at the way the waterbed scenes are filmed, he finds ways to keep those fresh. This episode was a bit of a rush job, surprisingly, perhaps. It was written in only 6 days. I'm not entirely sure why. I'm not sure what happened, but for whatever reason, they ended up having to produce an episode, or to write an episode quite quickly, and this is what they came up with. I mean, when you read up on the X-Files, you read about some episodes where they've got a bit of a checkered production history, and I think sometimes it's visible, sometimes it's noticeable, and sometimes it's not. And I don't think, when I watch this, I'm not really thinking about, you know, this doesn't feel like a rush job in any way to me.
No, not at all, not at all.
And what I really like, actually, is you talked about the way the episode transitions, so the first Mulder and Scully discussion scene we get in the episode after the teaser, you know, it's relatively insubstantial. And then when we see the same scene again and again, you know, they start talking about free will and predestination and deja vu and all sorts of things. And I really like the way those discussions kind of underpinned the episode. I thought it was great.
Yeah,
it's kind of interesting. Like I said, I mean, in the first couple of seasons, they would always take great pains to let you know how Mulder and Scully got assigned to a case and stuff. By this point, like I say, everyone's loose, so everyone's more relaxed. We can just accept the fact that they can kind of walk down the street to the bank and get involved in an X-File.
So. That's right. That's true.
And it's not something that bothers me at all when I watch it. You know, I just kind of roll with it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything else you wanted to say or to point out about Monday, Andrew?
No, like you said, I definitely think it's one of the strongest episodes in the season. And for me, it's one of the strongest episodes in the series. It really works. It's one that every time you watch it, there's some new thing you can notice. And like you said, you know, the whole, you know, the story repeats itself several times, and yet there's always something different. Sometimes it's obviously different. Other times it's small things from the position of an alarm clock, Mulder waking up to find the apartment flooded. You know, there's always some new thing to kind of be looking for. And I think it just, the way that they filmed it, the way they wrote it, it fired on all cylinders, and it really worked well.
Yeah, good stuff. I think it is kind of interesting as well to get that peek behind the curtain in a way of what does like an average boring day in Mulder and Scully and Skinner's life look like, you know?
So exactly.
All the stuff with the dull meeting and stuff's quite cool. So tomorrow, Andrew and I will be back, and we're going to be talking about Arcadia and Alpha. But in the meantime, you can find us on Twitter at @X_cast, or you can join us on Facebook and find our group. If you type in XCast, you should find X-Files Basement, the X-Cast podcast fan group. But until next time, listeners, trust no one.